Beyond the violence, it was the sheer all-pervasiveness of the Cultural Revolution that had left people so exhausted. One Tsinghua professor summed it up well in an offhand remark. "Even during the Japanese invasion," he said, "there were people selling sunflower seeds on the street. In the Cultural Revolution, there was nobody selling sunflower seeds on the street." In 1975, as the government backed off from past excesses, it seemed as though the worst times were over. But with Zhou Enlai dead, everything suddenly seemed uncertain again. As they wept for Zhou, Beijingers were also voicing their own fears. From his palace bed, himself close to death, Mao Zedong could hear the cries of mourning. It probably disturbed him, as did any sign of too much popular support for other leaders, even the dead. But now, confined to his bed, he could hardly do anything about it. Mao had once been a man of formidable endurance, a long-distance swimmer who had reasserted his personal authority at the beginning of the Cultural Revolution in mid-July 1966 by swimming the Yangtze unassisted at the age of 73. But in 1976 he could barely walk by himself, and his speech was slurred and barely intelligible. He was now 82, and it was astonishing he had lived so long. Although he grew up a pampered child in a rich farmer's house, he had lived as a guerrilla and a renegade under the harshest conditions since his 20s, travelling thousands of miles across China. Since taking power he had kept himself fit, exercising every day, but he had indulgent tastes, gorging himself at banquets and coercing young dancers from his home province of Hunan to his bed, dismissing his doctor's warnings about personal hygiene and his recurrent venereal diseases with the blunt exclamation, "I wash my dick inside them." He had made his name as a guerrilla leader and theorist, writing brilliant essays on how successful revolutionaries swam among the people, and leading a battered communist insurgency through nationalist betrayal, civil war, and Japanese invasion to ultimate triumph. But he had also come up through a party hierarchy in the 20s and 30s, where infighting, backstabbing, undermining, accusations of treachery or political deviance, and the ruthless disposal of political enemies were common practices. It was a climate that inevitably spawned someone like Mao, a genius at internecine political warfare. He had been using internal purges to dispose of potential rivals since 1926, when he had manipulated rumours of an anti-Bolshevik league of nationalist spies within the Communist Party to bolster his own position, a technique he had repeated in similar purges in the Communists' mountain redoubts in Yan'an in 1944 to 1945. He used the same methods he had developed as a guerrilla leader against his political enemies, never striking directly where he could first insinuate, undercut, and harass. He was a master at playing factions against each other, picking out a favourite here and a protégé there. Lin Leguo, the son of fallen leader Lin Biao, had accurately summed up Mao's tactics in a speech given to fellow plotters during the coup attempt in 1971, which was later distributed in internal party documents. "Today, Mao uses this force to attack that force. Tomorrow, he uses that force to attack this force. Today, he uses sweet words and honeyed talk to those whom he entices. And tomorrow, he puts them to death for some fabricated crimes. Those who are his guests today will be his prisoners tomorrow." Looking back at the history of the past few decades, do you see anyone whom he had supported initially who has not been finally handed a political death sentence? He will hurt you all the way, and he puts the blame for all bad things on others. Mao was a huge man, especially by rural Chinese standards. Nearly 6 feet tall and broad-shouldered, often unkempt. When younger, he had the air of a shambling bear. His height added to his authority. He towered over most of his political opponents. He was a moody man, given to sudden sulks, followed by outbursts of raucous humour. These had only worsened in old age. He had extraordinary personal charisma. Women were drawn to him. He was a notorious flirt and tease, and men followed him, both in battle and in politics. He liked to drop into peasant demotic, "fuck your mother," to make his points, but was equally adept at classical poetry or high-flown rhetoric. What really kept the whole of the leadership circling around him, even at 82, was that he had crushed almost everyone inside the party who had ever opposed him.